I got all kinds of war stories to tell, which are true.
Okay, just a moment. This is Mae Warren, and today's the 16th of April, 1996. I'm in Newark, Delaware, with Norm Lord, the Lord himself.
Okay.
That's what everybody says you are.
Got that right.
Now, if I may, I'd like to sort of go a little bit chronologically here. And first, I'd like to concentrate on what brought you to Washington and Lee in the first place.
Well, Washington and Lee, I had never heard of it. I went to the University of Delaware during the Depression, and I had never heard of the school. However, during World War II, I went to Washington and Lee in 1943 in November and took a course there to train officers and enlisted men how to conduct fun programs and fitness programs and friendship programs. And that's where I stole the idea I used for 86 years at Washington and Lee, fun, fitness, and friendship. So I left on near the Thanksgiving in November to go back to the 11th Airborne Division, which was my basic unit.
Okay, but let's talk about, was it called Special Services at that time?
When I went, it was called Special Services School, mm-hmm. and it was a school designed to train officers and enlisted men, welfare programs and athletic programs and rehabilitation programs, all kinds of things which are not combat. In other words, we didn't learn how to fire a rifle, or we didn't jump in a tank or anything like that. It was all classroom and field work without military equipment. We did have to dress in uniforms, though.
Mm-hmm.
I was a second lieutenant.
So what kind of people were there? Why would you have been selected, or why were other people selected to go to the School of Special Services?
I really don't know why I was selected, except I was directed by the battalion commander when I arrived from Camp Davis, North Carolina, out of Officer Candidate School as a second lieutenant. He knew that I had had an athletic background, so he said, Lord, I want you to build a football field. So I recruited soldiers and got the engineer unit to come in with their bulldozers and stuff like that, and I built a playground for our battalion.
Where?
That was at Camp Davis, North Carolina, where I got my commission.
Okay.
But it was Camp McCall, North Carolina.
Okay, I was confused. I thought you were saying to build a field at Washington and Lee, and that would have already existed. So, all right, you arrive in Lexington. Tell me what the town was like then in the middle of the war with for Special Services.
I remember riding with a lieutenant from the 11th Airborne Division in the engineering battalion, and we didn't know where Lexington was. We came north from Camp McCall, North Carolina, which was near Pinehurst, North Carolina. And we missed a turn in Buena Vista, and instead of going west on US 60, we went east on US 60, and we went over the mountain. And I said, something must be wrong. I said, we should be there by now. So we spent the night in some home, which took in the boarders, and in the next morning we got up and we got to Lexington in time to not be AWOL.
Okay, so you arrived in town.
I arrived in town, and we were processed and so forth. And since I was young and full of fire and ginger, I was put in a group which supposedly was supposed to be really fit, because the curriculum for us so-called jocks was a little different than the intelligentsia and the older people. They had people there from age 20, I'd say 20 to 60.
So you know what the campus is like today. What was the difference in wartime?
Well, they still had the front, they didn't have anything on the back campus, so-called. They had, Reed Hall was still there. And they had the front campus exactly like it is now. And we went to those, all those classrooms. And the co-op now, which is the co-op and bookstore, was a dining hall for the soldiers. And they put an addition onto it. And we ate there, unless you were married and living and had private apartments.
Mm-hmm.
You ate and slept there on the campus. I slept off campus. I lived on, I moved to on Taylor Street, down by the old Mayfair Hotel.
Oh, uh-huh. So was the town full of uniforms? Were there people?
Well, yes. Of course, you had VMI, which had what they call ASTP, Army Specialized Training Program. And then later on, Washington and Lee got an ASTP, Army Specialized Training Program, which were college-age students. So you had that military atmosphere, and you had the Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, and they didn't have an Air Force then. It was the Air Corps. And you did have to, when you went down the street or down to the drugstore or whatever, or to the movie, you had to dress in Army uniform. You could not dress in civilian clothes.
So did you have any interaction with the faculty, the normal faculty of Washington and Lee at that point?
Well, there were people, Dean Gillum, later came, he was there, and we did not have any actual classes taught by the faculty. The Army had their own faculty there. The Navy had people there, Marines, but most of them were Army.
Mm-hmm. And was President Gaines there on campus?
President Gaines, I never met President Gaines. I think he was on campus, but I never met him. Until, I think it was about the 15th of September, I'm not sure, when I came back in 1946. But I didn't meet him while he was, I was a student for the Army.
Uh-huh. Okay. And did you get much of a sense of Lexington during that time, during the war?
Repeat that?
Did you get much of a sense of the town of Lexington?
Oh yeah, everybody loved Lexington. We fell in love with it. We never heard anybody complain, even the people with national known name like Red Skelton and some of those people. I'll think of them later, but they just loved the place.
Now, were you there while those performers were there, and did you get? I've heard about the entertainments that went on.
Every person that went through the school had to learn a little bit about athletics and the arts, music and drama and crafts, public affairs. You got a smithering of everything related to taking care of people, morale, welfare, type of thing.
Now, this may be hindsight or it may be just totally off base, but the other day I got, in preparation for coming to see you, I got out the files on the School of Special Services, and there were these really neat programs about all these athletic things and all these games that were taught, and the impression, now I didn't have time to sit down and read it carefully, but the impression I got was that you were being taught how to teach games?
That's exactly right. We were told and taught how to teach and spread this game thing to the people to play. We had to use improvised games sometimes. We used all kinds of games. In fact, they wrote a manual about it, informal games, things like dodgeball, tug of war, hide and go seek. If it was fun for kids, we turned the old guys into kids. We had them learn how to play because we knew that they had to teach soldiers to do it when they left Lexington.
So what was the goal out there? Who and when were these people going to have time to play games when they were going off to war?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. In fact, I have a pamphlet in my doghouse downstairs where I have all kinds of data. The Department of Information and Psychological Warfare published a manual called What the Soldier Thinks. And they asked all kinds of questions, and they did all kinds of survey, scientific survey, from combat people, from people that were in training camps, people who were on the boat going over, and they found out that a happy soldier is a better soldier. Hence, the gentleman, General Marshall, I think he brought up the idea of using Washington and Lee as a base to open this school to train supervisors of this fun fitness friendship concept. I called it Give 'em a Little Hunk of Home. And it was stereotyped. We used that word for a lot. Give 'em a little hunk of home. And of course we had other expressions, and it was an enjoyable feeling to know that you were learning how to promote this idea. Now, I was a student there, remember, so I learned there, mm-hmm. But I had already had a background in the athletic part. I had no background in music, or I had it in junior high school, and I never sang in the choir, if you want to know that.
They wouldn't let me in either. Well, one of the things that it seemed to be stressed was the idea of teaching games that could be used in small quarters.
And with small quarters, sometimes without equipment, and also how to have games for the skilled player, because as you know, many athletes in professional sports, basketball, football, and baseball, were drafted or they volunteered for the services. So those people established the so-called skilled competition all over the United States and in foreign countries. They during lulls in combat, they would actually find a space and participate in so-called athletics, softball, basketball. They had portable basketball baskets to settle down into the ground. You've seen them in backyards with kids, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And they just played on the ground. They'd play basketball on the ground. And they'd play baseball on a diamond, which they just threw the bases down. It wasn't a carved out infield or anything like that.
Well, you know, it seems like it was really important work that was being done to keep the soldiers happy and healthy.
See, that's why we even had there, as students, some professional baseball players. In my class, we had a guy by the name of Patrick Mullen, who was played for Detroit, and we had I'm having a mental lapse. Before the interview's over, I'll give it to you. But we had several baseball players, football players, basketball players from college, and they were experts.
So you graduated.
I graduated from the school, and we got on the bus, and my wife joined me. While a student there, she came to Lexington, and because we had a child, a baby, we had difficulty. That was the one thing. The people of Lexington, like they are today, they don't want a family with small children moving into their apartment. They'd rather have one without babies. We did end up getting a place on Taylor Avenue and with the child. So
you were in Lexington just a few months.
I was in there for 1 month.
1 month.
And we got on the Greyhound bus because I didn't have an automobile. I did not have an automobile. I drove all the way back. We rode all the way back to Southern Pines, North Carolina. We had we rented an apartment, rented a home really, which had a nice apartment in it, and the landlord lived in the downstairs apartment, and we lived upstairs. So I stayed there about a week, and I got word that they were calling me back to Washington and Lee to be on the faculty of this school. And they said the reason why they needed me, because I was always juiced and enthusiastic about the program. Well, they had to let me go back, and I went back and was there during the first part of December, and then my commander of the 11th Airborne was so mad that they stole me that he went to the War Department. And they said, "Hell no, you can't have him." And I had to go back to the 11th Airborne Division. And they said, "Sorry, but we wanted you badly."
So you did go back to Lexington for a short period.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether it was 15 days or what, but I went back on orders, additional TDY, they call it, temporary duty training.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all happy, you know, and everything, but then all of a sudden, the General Swing, the commanding general, had a lot of pull in Washington, and he said, "I want that man back."
Well, you were a popular fellow, weren't you?
I guess. Well, yeah, I came back.
Okay, so you left Lexington for X number of years. What brought you back to Lexington?
I didn't go back for X number of years. I was only back.
No, you left for X number
of
years.
Yeah, I went back from Lexington.
In 1944.
To Camp McCall. Or Southern Pines is where I was staying. And then I came back to the school again and taught in the school.
Yeah.
And then the general
stole
me back, and I went back to Camp McCall.
Right.
And I stayed there until 1944, and it was of March of 1994. And the division had to go overseas to the South Pacific. And then somebody in Washington said, "That man is coming back." So I no sooner got there than I had to come back, and I was put in a an assignment in a camp. I don't even know the name of it now. It's some camp where they, it was a depot, personnel depot,
mm-hmm.
and down in Louisiana. And then all of a sudden, I got word that I was being put on permanent change of station, PCS, permanent change of station, from Louisiana to Washington and Lee University, Lexington, Virginia. So I came back a third time. I went there to the student. I came back as a faculty. I left and went back to 11th Airborne. I then am called back to Lexington again. So I stayed in Lexington from March of 1944 to January 1946.
Okay. Now tell me about that period.
Okay. From 1946.
No, no. During 40.
Oh,
1944
to 1946.
Coming back as faculty.
Yeah, coming back on the faculty. I worked wide open from classes started at 8 o'clock, but I had to be on deck on duty by 7:30 and be ready to go. So I was on the at the gymnasium at 7:30 every day except Sunday, Monday through Saturday, and we had classes from 8 o'clock until 16:30, which is 4:30.
Now, what was the gym like? What was going on in the gym at that time?
We taught them how to give exercises. We made sure that they knew how to do the exercise properly, because we wanted to, when they went back, they had to become an instructor for their unit. So we are actually training teachers now. Just like they trained me to become a teacher, now we're training them to become a teacher or a coach when they go back to their unit.
Mm-hmm.
So we taught them calisthenics. We taught them, and in the pictures you'll see some of the stuff that we did.
Now, who's we? Who else was doing that?
Well, we had a staff that was, it was such a wonderfully trained staff, and already qualified people. Just the cream of the crop was there.
Now, were these military people who come in from
military.
Elsewhere?
Every one of them are military.
Nobody from Washington and Lee?
Later on, no, none of them from Washington and Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they did near the, I'd say, this last 6 months of 1945, they did open up another school, which was taught at VMI and Washington and Lee. They had part of them at VMI and part of them at Washington Lee, because now Washington Lee has specialized training program students, Army Special ASTP, and VMI only had a handful of regular college students, just like Washington and Lee had a handful of regular college students who either had what they call 4F. They were physically unable to go and fight in the Army or Navy, Air Force, Marine. So they had a few regular students.
So,
and
what
VMI
about,
did too.
What about those students and their athletic requirements? Were they able to use the gym?
We did not teach them.
But were they able to use the gymnasium?
Very so.
You really had control of the
facility. Yeah, they did. I saw a few of them, and I remember two or three of them. But I never saw them participate in a class. But they did have classes, like we'd be out on the field teaching a soldier show class, how to act out in the field in a ravine, and you had an improvised stage, and all the students would be out there. So on that day, they would be using the swimming pool and the gymnasium and so forth, and bowling alleys.
Okay, now you mentioned these performers. From what I understand, they gave shows.
Yes, they gave beautiful shows.
Did you used to go to them?
We not only went to them, we had to act in them.
Oh, tell me about that.
I was an actor. I was a tree. I was a tree. I stood up on the stage, and I didn't have to say anything. I was a tree. I was a prop. But yes, we do. We had Red Skelton. He's the one that comes to mind. He was there. He was quite an actor. And he gave, at the end of each month, they had this soldier's show, and they had it in the Doremus Gymnasium. And the townspeople would try to get tickets to come, but the students either had to be in the play or they had to be watching the play so they could critique it. But some town folks did come to there. As a sideline, my wife went with me, and she was pregnant with twins, and Red Skelton was there, and he gave that crazy bubbling gin act. I don't know whether you've ever heard it or not, the bottle of gin, where he starts off sober and he takes a drink of his gin, and then he gets a little more inebriated, and then he takes another drink, and before the end he's all, but each time he adds more to his act. But we had beautiful actors and actresses, because remember, we had every branch of the service had women in, and we had wax and marine women and navy women.
So were they really plays, or were
yes.
they?
Oh yeah. Well, some of them they had to write the script. Oh yeah, some of them were plays that were copyrighted.
Really?
But some of them they had, of course they had, because they had people with that talent. They had the artists.
I guess I'd always assumed they were variety shows, but they weren't. They were.
Well, they had variety shows and they had other shows, but they had people who could write the script.
That's great.
And they had people who taught the students how to make the props. Is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
Decorations.
The sets. Uh huh.
And curtains, how to put the curtains up and how to pull the curtains, and yeah, I wasn't into that because I didn't have that kind of talent. But I was in a play as a student. That was one of, everybody had to, they had the thing, mass participation. Mm-hmm. Everybody participated. I taught when I was on the faculty, we had a class in improvised musical instruments. So the students had glass bottles of water and glass hanging up. You play on it, you know, play a tune on the bottles, and they had all kinds of improvised music. But I had to teach a course in that. I took the equipment that was made by the experts, and then when the students came around in say groups of 8 or 6 or 10. I would let them beat on the play, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. I had, and also we had to teach singing. I had to get out in front of a group of, I learned to do this when I was a student, but then when I became on the faculty, I had to have so much, so I'd get out and lead them in singing. I didn't know how to lead them, but I just got out and just, you know.
Waved your arms around, huh?
And they, believe it or not, did it. Okay.
That's great. All right, so the war comes to an end. Were you there when the Special Services School closed down?
Yeah, the Special Services School, when the war was closing down, the emphasis was on rehabilitation, psychological rehabilitation and physical rehabilitation, and how to return to civilian life. And so they put in different courses then. They call them educational rehabilitation and physical rehabilitation. And then they had the public affairs, and then they had the information and education. One section, all the sections except one, moved to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The one section which did not went to Fort Lee, and that was called the Physical Training and Athletic Directors School. And the ones that went up there was called the Public Information School and the Public Affairs School. Then the two rehabilitation schools went to a hospital. I think one of them was in Colorado and one of them was in Washington to learn how to treat bedridden soldiers and psychologically and soldiers with psychological problems.
Mm-hmm.
But our section, and I had to go with it because I didn't have enough points to get out. In 1946, they started letting people out, but not a lot. Only until after the bomb was dropped did they have mass, return home.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why they went to Fort Lee was because they were going to bring them back to Norfolk and New York City, the soldiers. They were going to put them through another training program for fighting the Japanese, and then they were going to go. Of course, in August, it was all over because
mm-hmm.
of the bomb.
Mm-hmm. So you got sent to Fort Lee?
I got sent to Fort Lee.
Okay.
Because, I didn't have enough points to get out. Now, there were a few who did get out because they were older than I was and who had been in the Army longer than I was.
Okay. But you didn't stay in Fort Lee.
No,
at
I
some
stayed,
point, you
no,
made the decision
I didn't. Well,
to
that's,
get back.
That now you're beginning to get to the point where I just couldn't believe it when I got a telephone call. And I got a telephone call from my old coach at University of Delaware. And he says, Norm, I want to come down and talk to you. And he was from Duke, he was a graduate of Duke University and played football at Duke, Coach Murray. And he said, well, where can I meet you? And I told him, meet me at Fort Lee, such and such a building. So he came down, he said, I want you to come back and be on my staff at University of Delaware. And I said, oh, that's great. I said, because that's where I met my wife, see, and I was, and she liked Newark. And I said, well, send me the details. He said, well, there are no details. He said, I just want you to come back and be on my staff. He said, I can't pay you much money. But he said, how does $2,500 a year stand? Of course, that was a lot of money pre-World War II. But I'll relate it to the story a little more when I say that I had 30 days of leave starting in August, and I was going to go on my leave, but they offered me a job. I got discharged on August the 6th, I believe. August the 6th, I was discharged at Fort Meade.
1946.
1946.
A year after the war ended.
Right, 1946.
Mm-hmm.
This was August.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this leave, and they pay me for the leave. So I've got almost a month's salary. I was a first lieutenant. But they also needed a person to work at Fort Lee, because some of the staff that they had were leaving. So they hired me as a civilian, and I never knew there was that much money in the world, and I hadn't been offered this job at the University of Delaware. So they offered me $5,999.95. And I could not believe that amount of money was being offered me. And my ranking, civilian ranking, was a GS 16. which is big bucks for me, being a poor boy. And I was all excited, and I was working, you know, and I was now a civilian, not wearing a uniform, but doing the same work I would have been doing had I stayed in the Army. And then I get this call from Coach Murray, and he came up, down to Fort Lee, and I told him how much I was making. He said, we can't pay that much. And he said, we'll give you $2,500. He said, but remember, your job will be eliminated as soon as the Army goes down and mm-hmm. has a big discharge rate. And I said, you're right there. I said, well, let me think about it. So I thought about it, and he calls again, and I says, you know, I haven't talked it over with my wife. Could you give me about 3 or 4 more days? He says, I can't give you 3 or 4 more days. He said, I'll give you 1 more day. On that day, I got a call from Washington and Lee University, and it was Cy Twombly, who was the director of physical education at Washington and Lee, and who knew me while I was a officer and a member of the faculty on that special services school. Mm-hmm. And he said, Norm, I need you badly. Can you come? I said, well, how much can you pay me? I said, I got a job here making $6,000, almost $6,000. And I said, I got a job offered to me at University of Delaware. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'll make a special exception. I'll go to the Board of Trustees. I'll get a special salary for you, and I'll give you $3,000 for 9 months' work. And I said, well, that's not $6,000. But he said, but you'll have 3 months off in the summertime, and you got all this vacation. And he says, you'll be an instructor. He says, we're going to give you a rank of assistant professor. He said, that's unusual. He said, because you don't have your doctorate. I said, no, I don't have my doctorate. So I got to thinking about it. I talked it over with Jill, my wife, and lo and behold, we decided that we'd go to Lexington. Now, this was near this was about the 29th or 30th of August. And I told him that I could not go over and break up until the 1st of September. He said, that's all right. He says, if you can leave there on the 1st of September, this is Cy Twombly talking to me. He says, we can still let you. He says, you'll still meet the contract. Because my contract read from September the 1st to, you know, for 1 year. So sure enough, I said, okay. I'll check the bus schedules, and I said, I'll get on a bus. I said, but I don't have a place to stay. He said, Norm, he said, there's no way to get a room. He said, you're either going to have to live in a hotel. I said, I don't want the job. I said, I can't afford to live in a hotel. He said, tell you what. He said, we'll make sure you have a place to sleep. Will living in the gymnasium be okay? And I said, is there a room in there? He said, no. He said, but you can sleep in the gymnasium. I said, Cy, I want to come back so badly, I'll sleep any place in that gym you want me to sleep. I said, just have a mattress on the floor and I'll come and sleep.
And what about Jell?
Jell would have to go home with a baby. So Jell leaves and goes back to her family. And I get on the bus. And I get to Lexington on the first day of September. I don't have a contract. All I had was Cy Twombly said, Norm, says, you don't have to worry about a contract. He said, that'll come later. He said, I know you can do the work. I know you can handle it. He said, just put up with living in the gym. So the whole first year, I lived in the gymnasium.
Oh my gosh, that's devotion.
Yeah, but it was a godsend, really, because I had no place to eat, so I had to eat all my meals at the they call it the Beanery, which is right behind Washington Hall. Now, I go with, I think it's been torn down. Yeah, it's been torn down.
Tell me about the Beanery. I haven't talked to anybody else. I've heard about the Beanery.
The Beanery was run by the university for the students who were there, who were the ASTP, the Army Specialized Training Program students, and by the few Washington and Lee students. And they also used that during the war to feed their own students. But then as the war wound down, faculty were coming back from all over the world for their job, and their wives had to stay where they were because they didn't have any place for their wives and family to live. So practically all the faculty were eating in the Beanery. And that's where I learned all the faculty members. They learned my name, I learned theirs. I ate three meals a day there, they ate three meals a day. Students waited on tables. It was a cafeteria, no table service, but the food was good. And
now you mentioned that you got to know the faculty. Who was the faculty at that time? What kind of people were you meeting?
Bill, Dr. Hinton was there. Mr. Mattingly, he ate there. The new faculty, I can't remember their names. A lot of the new faculty were eating there. Winter Royston, who is now still living and now retired, he ate there. Flick, Dr. Flick, who was psychology and social studies, he ate there. If you give me a few minutes, or maybe later, I'll remember so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But all the higher people, even the campus crew would eat there. They were allowed to eat there, and they ate on shifts. I mean, it was a continuum flowing in and going out.
Really? Huh. So were other people sleeping on mattresses in other buildings?
No. I was the only one who I don't know why, because I didn't have to pay anything for my room.
I should hope not. That would have been high rent if you had to rent the whole gymnasium.
And then I got promoted. They found a bed because September rolled around later in the month, they had teams coming in from West Virginia, Maryland, North Carolina, athletic teams. They would be coming in. And in those days, the contract, you didn't stay in a hotel. They slept in our gymnasium. The football players slept there. The basketball players slept there the first few years. But then later on, after the war, you know, actually settled down, I mean, the people were getting out. There were more people had access to the apartments in Lexington, and some of them owned homes there in Lexington. So their home was available. So then the people eating in the dining hall or the Beanery, then of course ate because their wife has moved back to Lexington. And
so
things begin to settle down like it was before the war.
Okay, so you had, at this point, you had a one-year appointment.
I had 1 year, right.
When did it settle down and you begin to...
Dr. Duchesne was the dean. I did not have a contract. He said, I know you. He says, and I know Cy. And he says, I think he'll renew your contract. He said, don't worry about it.
And
so when June came of next year, graduation, they had a few. I think they had a few people to graduate, but not like now. I mean, just the summer. Oh, they had summer school then too. So they had summer school. Students are coming back from World War II. They're going to summer school. Law students. The university just bloomed, boom, and it's got a tremendous student body. And the faculty are all coming back, practically every one of them are back. And now Washington and Lee is Washington and Lee. Because, see, remember, on January the 15th, 1946, I believe everybody left except the rear, what they call the rear detachment. The rear detachment is what stays to make sure that the, all the files are moved and any chairs that are broken are assessed and so they can be replaced. And so, but, so I think by the 1st of February, 1946, and the 1st of February 1947, 1st of February 1947, the school is a school is a school, university.
Mm-hmm. It's back to being its old self.
Yeah, being its old self. And old Lord is still there.
All right, hold on. It's a good time to turn the tape over.